You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman, and again, filling in for regular host Mark King. And I'm very lucky to have Mr. Tony Jones of The Athletic. He covers the Utah Jazz, and he has taken a little bit of time to join us on today's show. Mr. Jones, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, Mr. Jones, I think I speak for many when I want to send the appreciation your way. What I mean by that is that I know that several Memphis folks have followed you this year for obvious reasons, but your engagement with fans, your honest takes, and the content of your work, they're all wonderful. And so it's great to interact with you. And again, thank you for taking the time to join us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, let's jump right into it. I mean, you know, obviously what has dominated the headlines in regards to the Jazz and Grizzlies is Mike Conley. And, you know, Utah seemed to be the most prominent locale for Conley to head at the trade deadline. Just getting right to it, how close was a potential trade? What prevented it from happening? And is Utah likely to pick up their pursuit of him come the offseason?
Well, I think the trade got about, I would say, got to third base. And then I think Memphis, the Grizzlies were the team that kind of pulled off because I know that the Jazz very much wanted to get the trade done. You know, I think Memphis pulled off because I think today wanted to kind of open things up in the summer, see what's on the market, if there's a broader market. And I think that I think looking from their perspective, that was probably the smart move. There was more of an urgency to trade Marc Gasol because he's obviously, as you know, he has a chance to be an unrestricted free agent this summer. But with Mike Conley under contract for two more years after this, I think that you could look at kind of open things up in the summer and look at and see if there's a better market. So I think that that's the way that the Grizzlies wanted to go. And I do think the Jazz are still open to exploring trade talks for Conley once the summertime hits.
And the thing that I'll say is that the Jazz certainly are in the mix of things, and then we'll get to them in a second. But, you know, you have talked about a few times, you know, just like it seems like across the NBA, Conley is someone that's underrated. And I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts on, do you yourself, do Jazz fans, the Jazz market, do they feel that Conley would be that difference maker that could really elevate them to being, you know, they are a threat, obviously, but would it elevate their status? Would it make him more of a threat in maybe a post-Warriors NBA to get to the Western Conference Finals and have a chance at a championship?
Yeah, as long as he's healthy and he's playing the way he's playing now, you know, I've been one to be very complimentary of what I think about Mike Conley on social media, and I think that he's a terrific point guard. I think that he's a guy that fits really well next to Donovan Mitchell. I think that, you know, he's a guy that potentially can score in a half court. He can score in transition. He can really run a team. So he's a guy that I think, you know, changes some things for the Jazz because it gives them that second really dynamic off the dribble guy that can break down a defense. And I think the greatest strength for Donovan Mitchell right now is that he's sort of an equalizer. You know, he's the one guy that, you know, it's really hard to game plan for. You can scheme well, you can scout well, you can take away a lot of what the Jazz do, but, you know, Donovan Mitchell, you can just give him the ball and he can negate all of that. And Mike Conley's also a guy that can do that. And, you know, as you saw with Memphis when they beat the Portland Trailblazers and Mike Conley had a career high 40 points. You know, he's just a guy that there, when he's rolling and when he's on, you know, it's really tough to guard and he's really tough to keep out of the lane. He has a variety of floaters, in the lane. He's a guy who can score at the basket, and he's a guy who can score from beyond the arc as well.
And, you know, shifting focus from the Grizzlies, you know, I think there's a reason why the Jazz makes so much sense is because they've done a wonderful job. I mean, being able to put this team together, you know, obviously Rudy is the anchor. You have a Ricky, you know, you have Jay Crowder, every soccer dad's dream idol and Joe Ingles. And basically, the two, though, that I really want to talk about are Donovan Mitchell and Derek Favors. And starting with Donovan, you know, he is a premier talent. He burst onto the scene last year. I'm sure that Jazz fans loved him, but probably he exceeded their expectations. Overall this season, in terms of being a sophomore, do you feel he's taken a significant step forward? Has he kind of stayed the same, or has there potentially been parts of his game that he does need to improve on to really become, you know, from a great player to a true superstar?
Well, I think he's had – so. He started really slow. And, you know, when I say really slow, that was relatively slow. He was still having 20 points a game. But he was having some ugly nights shooting the basketball, especially in the first half of the year. Now, things have dramatically improved after January 1st. You know, he's averaging almost 28 points per game after January 1st. His efficiency has improved. He's had some really, really signature games. Last week in a win against in a row win against Denver, he really closed that game out. And obviously, he had a 46-point performance against the Milwaukee Bucks on Saturday. So, you know, I would say in the first two months of the new year, Mitchell has taken a real leap, and he's played at a real all-star level. And he's shown signs of being a really dominant scorer. And I think that's probably his ceiling in the league is I think that he can be one of the very best scoring perimeter players in the NBA at the apex of his career. So he's got to continue developing as a point guard as well as a shooting guard. Last night against the New Orleans Pelicans, he had 8 turnovers. He can't do that, and he knows that he can't do that. You know, he's got to continue rebounding the basketball, continue defending. I think he needs to defend better, especially at the point of attack. And I think that he just needs to continue developing all of the other parts of his game, but. There's no doubt that he's having a really, really, really great start to his career. He's the fastest player in Utah Jazz history to score 3,000 points. He's leading all sophomores in the NBA in scoring. You know, so he's built off of last year, and I think that for the second straight year, he's going to be a leading scorer of a team that makes the postseason. So I think that there are ways for him to improve, and there are ways for him to maximize his ceiling. But at the same time, he's accomplished a lot as well.
And I think that that's what makes Utah such a dangerous team. I mean, we've seen it before. Their upset of the Thunder in the playoffs. The double overtime thriller that may be the game of the year. You know, Donovan Mitchell stepped up with Russell Westbrook and Paul George at the top of their games. But when I look at the Jazz and when you look at the rest of the Western Conference, it seems like a name that has been around forever. It's hard to believe he's 27, but that could be a real, real asset for the Jazz with the way he's playing over the past 2 or 3 weeks is Derek Favors. He has really stepped up. He's really become an offensive threat over the past 2 weeks. If he can continue that, do you feel that, you know, that makes Jazz even more dangerous and he really could be an X factor come a playoff series?
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, here's the thing. He's already been an X factor of playoff series in 2 years. And this is how I explain it. He had 17 points and 13 rebounds, I believe. And this is just off the top of my head. So think he had 17 points and 13 rebounds 2 years ago in Game 7 against the Los Angeles Clippers, which the Jazz won. And last year, he had a terrific Game 2 on the road against Oklahoma City, which was the game that the Jazz used to get their road win in OKC, which ultimately allowed them to win three games at home and win the series. So, you know, he's already been an X factor, and he's already been a playoff hero twice, so to speak. But I agree with you wholeheartedly. He's playing the best basketball of his career. The stats may not show it because, you know, he's only playing 25, 26 minutes a game, so it might not be reflected in the statistics. But when you look at favors on the floor, and you look at the eye test of how he's performing, he's at a peak level athletically. He's got terrific hands. He catches everything, and he catches a lot of things in traffic that other bigs don't catch. And he's dunking on people. He had 25 against the New Orleans Hornets, and he's continuing to rack up double doubles. He was terrific against Milwaukee. He was terrific against Denver. You know, so I think at 27 years old, I mean, he's playing the very best basketball of his career, and it's interesting that he's doing so in a role that's muted. And I wonder if, you know, I wonder if the muted role is helping him. Derek Favors wants to play 35 minutes a game, and there are times where, you know, he's frustrated because he's not closing games. He's playing the first three quarters, and he doesn't play the fourth quarter because the Jazz go small in the fourth quarter. But at the same time, when you play 26 minutes a game, 27 minutes a game, that helps your knees. And Derek Favors has had issues with his knees in the past, and he's not having those same issues right now. He's healthy right now, and he's healthy even though that there are times where his role frustrates him. He approaches that role in the right state of mind. And right now he's maximizing every minute that he's on the floor. Every minute that he's on the floor, on both ends of the floor, he's been active. And I think even if he's in a role that sometimes can lend to some frustration, I think that ultimately it may be good for him in terms of his health and in terms of the preservation of his body.
And that's the thing. It's just that's the thing about the Jazz, you know, with their defensive base philosophy. I think that they ultimately are a more talented team than when the Grizzlies had their grit and grind era. But it does have some similarities. And just, you know, I've watched a few of their games, and when Favors is on, if his offense and his defense, definitely as a two-way player, is certainly an asset to feature. Well, and again, we're being joined by Tony Jones from The Athletic. He covers the Utah Jazz. As we wrap up here, Tony, just a couple of quick hits from you in regards to some Grizzlies players, both future and past views in mind. So the reason why I actually interacted with you a few months ago on Twitter was because I was comparing Jaren Jackson to Rasheed, and you made sure I had respect for Rasheed in mind. I don't know if you remember the interaction or not.
I do remember.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I just wanted to get your thoughts on Jaren Jackson Jr. from someone who knows the NBA, who's not in the Memphis market. What are your thoughts with him compared to this rookie class, and do you feel it is a wise move for Memphis to truly build around him at such a young age?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's a guy who's a dominant, who has a chance to be a dominant player in this league, and I think that he has a chance to be a dominant two-way player in this league. I remember when I watched him at Michigan State and, you know, just watched a lot of film on him, and I said to myself, I think that he has the chance to be the best big man the NBA has seen defensively since Kevin Garnett. And I think what I thought was that he's the closest thing that I've seen to Kevin Garnett. And you know, and I still think that he's a guy who covers a lot of ground defensively. He's terrific at guarding the rim. He's terrific at guarding out on the perimeter. And he's a lot farther offensively than anybody thought at this point. He's a guy who can score in the post. He's a guy who can be a pick and roll big man. He can be a pick and pop, and he can stretch you all the way out to the perimeter and 3-point range. So there's so much to like about what he is. Now the question is, you know, what position do you play him at? What's his ultimate NBA position? I happen to think that he can play power forward and center, but I think, you know, however the Grizzlies see him, I think that it affects the way they rebuild. So if they see him as a center, you know, do you go out and try to get a stretch four? If you see him as a four, do you try to go and get a five? Or you can just, you know, win the lottery and get Zion Williamson, and then you can, that answers that. But he's a guy that you can certainly build around. He's a guy who I think is absolutely your franchise guy, and I think that Memphis is correct in seeing him that way and proceeding accordingly.
Gotcha. And I think that that'll be music to Memphis fans' ears, you know, hearing the Garnett comparison. And really the last question, to follow up with the comment that you made, talking about the shoes Jaren Jackson would be filling if he did figure out, if he did become a four, obviously is of Zach Randolph. You had tweeted about, I would say, 2 to 3 weeks ago, that when it came to trash talking, in your talks with players in the NBA, that the one player who other players truly felt would back up what he would say would be Zach Randolph. And, of course, over the past few days, there's been the clip of when he told Boogie Cousins, you know, in my hood, bullies get bullied. Could you elaborate on that? I mean, does Zach Randolph truly strike fear in other players when it comes to trash talking?
Yeah, there are a couple of players. I mean, you know, multiple players I've talked to and, you know, and talk to about that stuff. And I'll tell you what one guy said to me, and he said, you know, he's like, I wouldn't back down from Zach Randolph, but he's the guy that practices what he preaches. And, you know, and that's the sentiment around the league that, you know, he's, you know, when you look and you say, okay, who's quote unquote really about that life? Zach Randolph's name is at the top of the list, along with James Johnson from the Miami Heat. Nobody wants to mess with a guy who's like a 7-time black belt. You know, so it's, you know, most of the NBA, you know, a lot of the NBA, you know, they get into these shoving matches and it's like, okay, sure, hold me back. But there are a couple of guys who, you know, among players, they know that those are the guys that not only will back up what they say on the floor, but they remember and they'll take it one step further off the floor. And Zach Randolph is at the top of the list. So people, so Zach Randolph commands a lot of respect among his peers around the league. I think is that safe to say.
And I know that we did a poll for yesterday's show on the Locked On Grizz Twitter site about the most beloved Grizzlies. He's respected around the league. He's absolutely loved here in Memphis. Tony, this right here shows as to why I feel are probably one of the best that do what you do. Can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us. Hope you enjoy Memphis. Get you some good food, and we definitely will look forward to having you on again soon. So good luck to you and the Jazz, starting on Saturday going forward, okay?
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me.
All right. Thank you for your time, Mr. Jones. We'll be right back with you here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.
Welcome back to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. And again, we cannot thank Mr. Tony Jones enough from The Athletic. He covers the Utah Jazz. You can follow him on Twitter. But it's always exciting. I know that Memphis fans want as much information as they can. They crave it. And it was great to get some insight from Mr. Jones in regards to, you know, Mike Conley, Jaren Jackson, the Jazz in general, and just get his perspective on several different topics. So again, can't thank him enough for joining us. Obviously tonight, the Jazz do come to Memphis, It's another very good team that the Grizzlies are facing in Memphis, coming off the victory on Tuesday night. And the thing about the Jazz is that, again, like the Trailblazers, they're kind of an afterthought in the Western Conference because they don't have that just superstar on their team. But the Jazz are a very, very complete team, and it starts with the defense. You know, I was talking with Mr. Jones, it seems like their philosophy is very much like the grit and grind era Grizzlies. But the thing about the Jazz is that while they are very, very good on defense, analytically, the Jazz are just a wonderful team. They are a very, very strong team on paper. And it starts with Rudy Gobert. And that's amazing to say when you have Donovan Mitchell amongst other players. But Rudy Gobert is truly a player. You may not think about it because the offensive counting stats are typically, not to the level that you would consider him to be an all-time player. But Gobert is. I mean, this year, with over 2,000 minutes played, Rudy Gobert is averaging a 132 offensive rating and a 101 defensive rating with a 24.3 player efficiency rating. No player has ever set that stat baseline with more than 2,000 minutes played in a season. I'm not saying that Rudy Gobert is having the best season that a post player has ever had. However, what I am saying is that he is having one of the best two-way seasons, one of the most effective seasons on both ends of the court that a post player has had in NBA history. He truly should have been the Western Conference's reserve over Karl Anthony Towns, in my opinion, and I don't think that folks give Gobert credit for just how dominant and how effective of a talent that he is. There's a reason why the Jazz are consistently a tough out, and they consistently exceed expectations in the playoffs. It's just like when the Grizzlies had Marc Gasol in his prime. It makes your team play so much more effective when you have that anchor that can take care of business down in the blocks on both ends of the court, and that's what Gobert is providing this season. You know, as we discussed with Tony Jones about Derek Favors, he also is having, he basically is playing the best basketball of his career right now. He's continuing to show very good effectiveness on defense, but it's his offense that has really taken over. It seems like that while Mr. Jones was saying he wants to play 35 minutes a game, his efficiency and his effectiveness happens when he plays actually 25 minutes a game. And as we've seen, here in Memphis with DeLon Wright, when you've got that player who can give you 25 minutes of, they're not an all-star, but they can play at an all-star level, at that level of minutes, it makes a huge difference. It allows for you to, it allows for your team to have extra opportunity to play above its actual talent level. And while, the Jazz obviously are a playoff team, Derek Favors playing at the level he does night in and night out, at 25 minutes a game, that really allows for them to be able to really beat anyone any given night. But of course, when it comes to the Jazz, while their defense obviously is the basis of their success, it really comes down to the play of Donovan Mitchell. If Donovan Mitchell is that go-to scoring option, his offense combined with the efficiency of Gobert and Joe Ingles and Derek Favors, it makes the Jazz a very, very tough to beat team, and that could be said for anyone. But the Jazz truly are a very skilled team that night in and night out can find multiple ways to beat you. I mean, right now they're 18th in the NBA in offensive rating, but they're third in defensive rating. And that's the thing about it. Like I was telling Tony Jones, they're 19-8. In the 2019 calendar year. But the big stat to me that really is showing how effective they're playing is the fact that they have scored 100 points in every game but one this year. If the Jazz are scoring 100 points night in and night out, there's going to be several games where they're going to keep their opponents in double digits. So obviously, again, just a very high floor team. If one part of the team effectiveness is off one night, on one side of the court, they're going to be able to pick it up on the other end of the court. But as I stated, the effectiveness of Ingles, of Gobert, of Favors, all of that is there. But this team truly goes as Donovan Mitchell goes, and I think that the Donovan Mitchell's per month splits show that. Basically, this year he got off to a very slow start, and while Mitchell has not, analytically or statistically been as dominant when it comes to his overall offensive performance. His points per game have improved, so have the Jazz. And so, we're looking at, him averaging, nearly 23 points a night in October. That got all the way down to 18 points in December. But then in January, February, March, in the post-All-Star break, he's averaged nearly 29 points a game. When Donovan Mitchell is scoring to the potential that he has the ability to, again, the Jazz are just very tough to beat. And they are a true nightmare with their defense and with their offensive potential in the playoffs. I truly do feel the Jazz could be a team that could surprise folks and make it to the Western Conference Finals this year, if not beyond. So with the Grizzlies matchup against the Jazz coming up, where do the Grizzlies potentially have an opportunity to beat them? Where do the Grizzlies have a way of being able to exploit an advantage to try and pull the upset tonight? They did it earlier this year with in Utah to a surprise victory when the Grizzlies were playing to a level that many didn't expect to open the season. One of the key victories that kind of proved to people we were here was our ability to beat the Jazz in Utah early in the season. Really what it comes down to is this. The Grizzlies are going to have to play like they did Tuesday night again. They are going to have to find a way to get good shots, get the ball in Conley's hands, and really focus on making sure that they are offensively efficient. I mean, the thing about it is this, is that the Jazz are very good on defense, but the perimeter defense of the Jazz, it can be exploited to an extent. The Jazz themselves are, in terms of their offensive production, they themselves are 22nd in the league in three-point percentage, and they're 28th in the league in two-point attempts. So one thing that tells me is this, is that the Jazz, as good of a team as they are, if you can find a way to keep Mitchell quiet, I know that's very hard to do, but at the very least make him inefficient with his shots, and then you yourself have the ability to hit some shots, you can stay with the Jazz. And especially if you can do it in a way to where you can get into the triple digits, I think that's where the Grizzlies are going to find their biggest advantage. If they can do like they did on Tuesday night, they can find efficiency on the perimeter, and they can also some way silence, or not silence, but if they can keep Donovan Mitchell inefficient, I do feel that the Grizzlies have a decent chance to stay with the Jazz in this game. Another thing that would probably make a big difference is, feature Jonas Valanciunas. Again, my partner on the 3&D podcast, Justin Lewis, he's mentioned it several times. Get that inside-outside mixture going. If you can make a few shots outside, that'll bring the Jazz's defense up. Find some open opportunities for Valanciunas. Again, very hard to do with Favors and Gobert down low. But just the Grizzlies are going to have to win this game based off strategy and based off effective adjustments and based off intelligence on how to attack the Jazz's defense. And I really think that if the Grizzlies can get this going into a shootout, they would have a chance to win. Overall, I do pick the Jazz to win tonight's game. However, I did pick the Trailblazers to win a Tuesday night's game. And we beat the Trailblazers at their own game by getting into a shootout. While it may be uncharacteristic of the Grizzlies, past and present, this is the new look of the roster. This is how the Grizzlies win now. So if it's working, continue on with it. We've shown that the Grizzlies had the potential to play that style of game, play it effectively, and to a high level. And I think that exact type of game plan would work against the Jazz. So looking forward to tonight's game. Again, I'm a big fan of the Jazz. I think, again, they have a very high ceiling as a team. And while I do feel they will win tonight, I also do feel the Grizzlies, the way that the Grizzlies are winning right now, could position the Grizzlies to have a good chance at an upset here in Memphis. We're going to be right back to finish up this week. We're going to look forward to the Grizzlies' upcoming schedule as they continue to play to convey. So as the Grizzlies look at tonight's game against the Utah Jazz, it is another game against a very tough Western Conference opponent, a game that the Grizzlies are going to have to play very efficiently, very effectively to be able to win. They're basically going to have to play at their best in order to beat the Jazz, but it's, as we know, it's not something that, you know, cannot be done. We've done it before this year, but regardless of tonight's game, I would anticipate, I'm going to operate in this segment as if, you know, the Jazz do win this game. The Grizzlies obviously still have the focus of conveying, and while yes, it is an uphill battle, victories like we had against the Trailblazers on Tuesday night, that makes it a easier concept to see happening. You know, it's all about, you know, we use the word net a lot in analytics and discussion of basketball when we're discussing statistics, and that's what it comes down to. If the Grizzlies can start getting a few of these games that they're not supposed to win won, then they really are positioning themselves to be able to have a better chance of conveying. But let's not kid ourselves. The middle of March is probably going to be looked at and viewed as the most critical time. Our play over the next 10 to 14 days is likely going to determine whether we convey or not. And the reason why is this. After the Jazz, the Grizzlies play the Magic on Sunday, March 10th. The next game, they turn around that Wednesday and they play the Hawks. Then they play the Wizards. And then after the Rockets game on the 20th, they turn right around and play the Magic. And so the thing about it is this, is that the Grizzlies have a stretch here to where they play the Magic twice, the Hawks once, and the Wizards once. Those are three teams who are right now in the middle or back of the top 10 of the lottery. And these are teams that we want to have lose, so it gives the Grizzlies' record overall a better chance of moving back in the lottery draft and having a chance to convey. But the other big thing that the Grizzlies have to take advantage of is that this is a stretch of the schedule where the Grizzlies have built-in rest, more than they did earlier. And as we know, the Grizzlies play much better, you know, off of rest. You know, between the Magic game on the 10th to the Hawks game, there's 2 days worth of rest. We get another 2 days before we play the Wizards on March 16th, and then we get 3 days before we play the Rockets again on Wednesday, March the 20th. So the Grizzlies' stretch of games here through March 22nd, so basically for the next 2 weeks, it's a very important stretch. But it also is really, really helpful that we have those built-in days to be able to get the rest that we need, to get some players who have been injured, you know, back to playing shape, to allow for, you know, Herculean efforts by Conley and DeLone Wright and other players. They're able to put all that they can into the game and then, you know, refuel as the schedule, picks up. But yes, I do think that the win over the Trailblazers really does kind of reset the Grizzlies' focus on being able to convey. And if they can find a way to pull off the victory tonight against the Jazz, you know, it really positions them to accomplish their goal. And that's what it comes down to. You know, if you can debate all day long, whether the Grizzlies should convey or they should not convey, I personally think that they should, because overall, as we're going to discuss on the 3-and-D podcast that'll come out later on today, what it comes down to is the Grizzlies are just a team that, you know, yes, they're playing better now, yes, it's fun, yes, they're competitive, but you've got to be able to infuse this franchise with talent. And that's the whole idea. Yeah, it's great if the Grizzlies are in the lottery this year that they, you know, get a young, controlled player. But where the Grizzlies are likely going to pick, this year's draft just does not compare to the potential of the next 2 years' draft. So if the Grizzlies were to convey, then you truly start the rebuild. And I feel that that's the best avenue towards getting the talent that will really help, you know, propel your team in the right direction. And that's That should be the focus. You know, in my conversations this week with the different folks that I've been lucky enough to talk with, I feel like the point that was made the most, or the point that I am going to take with me the most, is what I discussed with Joel Mullinax yesterday about how the Grizzlies can join those other teams with having multiple players on the top 25, under 25 list. Joel Mullinax mentioned restricted free agency. You know, that's one way to go about doing it. That's probably a way that the Grizzlies are going to have to get lucky to hopefully hit a home run. If not, though, at least to find a supporting cast. But if the Grizzlies do convey this year and then they go into a full rebuild mode, you may start to see in the 2020 draft where the Grizzlies are in a position to really get a young player that they can match with Jaren Jackson to make a difference going forward. So that's the thing. As we look at the Grizzlies' rest of the season, it's definitely worthwhile to pay attention to the moments and to pay attention to, you know, the historic runs that are there. You know, we've got Conley's pursuit of the all-time points record. We've got the players that have come over in the trades playing at the level that they are, trying to establish to the Grizzlies franchise, you know, hey, it's worth keeping me, you know, beyond this year. But more than anything, as the Grizzlies continue to be competitive and to win, it's better for our future. And that is what I'll end with. That is the reason why, if however you look at this season, that is the reason why I feel the Grizzlies have got it right in making this season better than last year. Last year, we were tanking to get a better draft pick in order for us to be able to have a brighter future. This year, we're having to win in order for us to have a brighter future. And that's what it comes down to. Just as Joe Mullinax said yesterday, the reason why it's fun right now to cover the Grizzlies is because they're competitive. And we have a reason to be competitive. And if we can keep up the way that we played against the Trailblazers, I do truly feel we have a good chance to convey. I didn't have that feeling a week ago. But if Mike Conley and the rest of the roster is playing at the level that it is right now, the Grizzlies are a tough team to beat with how efficient they are on offense. And if we can continue to get better on defense, if we can continue to use rotations that are effective, use our substitutions correctly, if JB can show added value by how he uses his offensive sets, his lineups, and things such as that, I truly do feel the Grizzlies have the ability to pull a few more upsets, plus beat teams that they're supposed to in order to convey. But that's what it comes down to. It should be exciting to see the Grizzlies play. We need to win because in this situation, winning is the best for our franchise's future. And beyond it being fun, it also is just nice to be able to celebrate both the team and the players having success. At the end of the day, that's what it's all about. That's all that you can truly ask for, you know, from a fan's perspective. Cannot thank Mark and you, the listeners, enough for giving me the opportunity to join y'all this week. It's been a pleasure. This is something that I'm passionate about doing. I'm passionate about seeing the teams that I cheer for, you know, be able to have success. It's nice to see the Grizzlies again going into games with the true chance of winning night in and night out. But the main reason I enjoy doing this is the interaction. I just enjoy being able to, when my team succeeds, interacting with those who are just as passionate about the Grizzlies as I am. Again, can't thank Mark enough for the opportunity. He will be back next week. Make sure you get questions into the Monday mailbag. As always, he's got some exciting times coming up that'll lead to a lot of good content each and every day. Mark offers great insight and great access to the Grizzlies that makes you, the listener, that much closer to the overall experience. If you wanted to sponsor Locked On Grizzlies, please reach out to Mark at Locked On Grizz on Twitter. You can also reach Mark himself at King_Producer, and you can also visit the podcast at LockedOnGrizzlies.com. We wish each and every one of you nothing but the best as this year continues on for you. Also, we hope that y'all have a great weekend, and hopefully the Grizzlies will continue to have success on the court as they play to convey. Have a great weekend. Thanks again so much for joining us, and go Grizzlies.